Up next, we're talking money with the man responsible for fee-only financial planning in Ohio, founder of the National Association of Personal Financial Advisors, and expert advisor to the Wall Street Journal, New York Times, Kiplinger's Personal Finance, and U.S. News & World Report. It's the only financial planning show on radio, Managing to be Wealthy, with your host, John Sestina.
Good evening and welcome to Managing to be Wealthy. This is Tyler Cook sitting in for John tonight. Joining me this evening, Craig Konstantinovich and Tony Payne, both certified financial planners. Guys, thanks for being here.
Yep, happy to be here, Tyler.
Great to be with you.
Tony, how are you, sir?
Great to be with you. I love it. Life is good.
Awesome. We got a great show planned, as always. And with any questions, call 821-9886 or 800-610-WTVN. And again, seems like every week there's something new to talk about and how it can affect people's financial plans. So we're going to cover a lot of topics like we normally do.
I thought you were going to say it was just going to be about fantasy football,
no, sir.
Was going on in, you know, the football world, and now you're willing to talk finances here?
I won't mention your Browns.
Well, it's all right. Your Cowboys are right there with us.
That's right. That's right. It was a rough day. But we've got a great show. We're going to start with the GOP tax reform plan, and this is really a framework for what could happen.
Yep.
I don't think everything in it will get through. That's just kind of how this works, right? But nonetheless, it's interesting to look at that and see, you know, how you may be affected by it. Or maybe you've heard some general guidelines, but we'll give you a little more specifics today on some of the things we learned this past week. And guys, yet another financial scandal. This one was huge. This involves college athletes, financial advisors, coaches. It's pretty widespread, and it's a real serious one. We're talking about the FBI involved and wiretaps and bribery and you name it. So we'll talk about that. And I also want to spend some time on a topic tonight that's near and dear to my heart, and that's just educating our kids about personal finance and financial literacy. We know the schools do a little bit of it, at least here in Ohio, but by no means is it enough, in my opinion.
And that's another great point, because I was actually talking to someone today involved in the Hilliard City school system, and they're talking about doing a financial just awareness kind of program and
that's
doing
great.
You know, a couple week long course right now. And while right now within the Hilliard City School District, it is built into their social studies aspect that they should be talking about it. I've talked to some of the people that are involved there, and they've said there's very minimal amounts of data that's actually discussed or information, anything that's discussed with it. So now having someone else kind of broad stream it, bring it into the actual course, framework at this point, It's a huge step, and it's something that a lot of school districts are starting to realize it's necessary to talk to our kids about how to manage this, not just from a, hey, can you balance a checkbook, but you have student loans, you want to buy a house, you're going to have your first child. What all does that mean, and how does that work into everything else that you want to do? It's starting to become much more of an awareness situation, and people are starting to catch on to that.
Yeah, that's great. I think there's a lot of ways that you can tackle that. And it can start as early as, you know, 5, 6 years old. In fact, I'm going to share a story from my daughter a few weeks ago with a birthday present, which is pretty interesting. So we'll get to that. And then if we have time at the end, too, I also want to bring up some tips with property and casualty insurance, also known as auto, home, and umbrella insurance. There's a lot of things to discover there. And I think most people probably, when they get their insurance, you know, they never look at it, right? And that's normal. That's normal.
Umbrella, I left it in the car.
Yeah,
I don't know what you're talking about.
Right. So if we have time at the end, we'll get into that. But as we shift into the fourth quarter today, actually, October 1st, we shift our focus onto some of those topics. So let's jump in, guys, with this new tax. I guess it's called framework, really, is what it is.
Yep.
And I want to start just by reading what the goals are. And there's a 9-page document. You can get this online. But the goals of this tax reform proposal are pretty straightforward, right, in general concept. Tax relief for the middle-class families.
Yep.
The simplicity of a postcard tax filing system for the vast majority of Americans.
You're saying I can file my tax return on a postcard?
That's the idea here, right?
That's ludicrous. There's no way. Yeah, no way.
We'll see. In fact, Craig, you know this at our office. I walked past the original tax return from the early 1900s that's hanging in our office. I think it's a replica. I don't think it's the actual one. But the whole thing, including instructions, was 4 pages long.
Yes.
The entire thing.
Yep.
And the tax rate, do you remember what that was?
No.
1%. 1%.
That's a stiff penalty there.
That's right. Remember, the tax system was never meant to be a way to run government. That was not what was intended. So, again, simplicity. Tony, how tall is the tax code? If sheets of paper, it's over, what, 6 feet on top of each other?
I'll be honest with you. I can't keep track anymore.
It's constantly changing, yeah.
I'll let you know. We're going the right direction, at least with regulations, starting to reduce some of that paperwork. So hopefully, and it's included in this framework, that would reduce that mountain of paperwork dramatically, because when we say file on a postcard, that means avoid some of those extra sheets and extra sheets,
right,
where you have to explain the explanation. All that goes away.
It would be wonderful. It would be wonderful. Again, that says for most Americans. Another general goal of this tax reform is ending the incentives for companies to ship jobs and capital and revenue overseas, right? Keep jobs here. As we've talked about before, to really get this economy rocking, you've got to have that job growth and, more importantly, the wage growth within those different job sectors.
The latter is the far more important piece to that puzzle.
Right, wage growth. You got it. And then the broadening of the tax base to provide providing greater fairness, as they call it, for all Americans by closing the special interest tax break loopholes, Tony.
Loopholes, huh? You mean the tax code.
That's right. There is no loophole. It is the code.
Oh.
Right?
Now, that statement, again, let's be full disclosure people here, broadening the tax base. That means some of those who may not be paying taxes now, at least income taxes, may be providing greater fairness. Kind of a nice fluff there. I like it. It sounds good. And then closing those special interest tax breaks and loopholes. Special interest, that may be. I mean, they've said they want to protect the mortgage and charitable deduction, but everything after that, it seems like maybe fair game.
Yeah, so I'm going to get into those details too.
Special interest could be something else.
Right.
Yeah, you got it.
Yeah, exactly. Let's start with a quick one, and this is, I think, very easy to understand, and it's what they're calling a zero tax bracket. So essentially, what they're going to do to create a zero tax bracket is double the standard deduction what it is right now. So you're basically going to have a $24,000 standard deduction for a married filing joint couple, $12,000 if you're single. So what that means is the first $24,000 of a married couple's income, you pay 0% tax. Sounds pretty good.
That's great. Fantastic. Compared to what we're looking at right now, where there's seven different income tax brackets that you may fall into, the 0% being a very nominal piece of your income.
Right. And that's the next big piece to this, which is essentially taking those seven brackets that we have right now and reducing it to three. So you'd have the first bracket would be at 12%, the next would be at 25%, and the third would be at 35%.
So just think about this from a planning perspective. Again, I know we talk about the numbers, we go into the details here, but to know that from an individual household standpoint, to not have to go out, hire a possible accountant, someone else to actually go through, do your actual tax returns, if you know that the first $24,000 is going to be income tax free, boom, that's taken care of. That's set aside. Now, anything above that, not only do you have to worry about, okay, am I going to fall into one of the, six or seven other tax brackets? No, we're removing that. We're simplifying it. You may pay, in this instance, let's say, a 10-15% tax rate on your income at that point. Now, just think about that. That means that you have more opportunities to use what you earn month to month, day to day for your household, as opposed to paying that to Uncle Sam, which in turn is going to generate more opportunities for you to use that income within the government and grow our gross domestic product or our GDP.
That's the goal. The idea is more money in people's pockets, right?
Exactly.
They'll spend it more wisely than the government will. So we're going to continue with this, guys, and get into some more specifics. And then, as I said earlier, we'll talk about that scandal that rocked the sports world this week, and there was also some financial planning impacts there as well. So you're listening to Managing to Be Wealthy on 610 WTVN. Welcome back to Managing to Be Wealthy. This is Tyler sitting in for John, joined by Tony and Craig this evening. And guys, over the break, we got a call here. So Chuck, welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks for taking my call. Hey, I got a question about PMI insurance.
Okay.
To be very short, I was going through a separation. We were separated for like 10 years, and I finally gave back the house that was rental property to the bank. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
On my last taxes, okay, now I was paying PMI insurance for those 10 years or 12 years, however long I had the house. The loan, the bank who had the loan, actually was transferred by Bank of America, which was sold to another corporation, mm-hmm. and they forgave the loan. because the wording was forgave the loan, I end up having a major tax burden on it because it was actually sold by sold less than what was owed on it, and it was like, I don't know, $12,000-$15,000 forgiven of loan. My understanding was that the PMI insurance is supposed to cover any shortfalls for the loan. Now, I did go to the bank, and the bank will not give me any information saying that that was not my insurance, that was the bank's insurance. So I have no obligation. They have no obligation to give me any type, whether or not they paid that bank or not. But I do know that I got a major tax burden on that house.
Very interesting. You know, that's a very detailed scenario, but that may be true what the bank said, because remember, PMI insurance, private mortgage insurance, is a special type of policy that's geared for to protect the lender, right? Not you, but to protect the lender against the loss if a borrower has defaults. So
it was a result of pretty much the 2007-2008 housing crisis.
I'll be honest with you, I overpaid for the house. I bought the house high, and because we were separated and my ex was in Florida, and I couldn't get a hold of her. I couldn't sell the house. I couldn't refinance the house. I couldn't do nothing because I couldn't find her. So, because of that.
That question doesn't fall right in the specific parameters of a very clear-cut answer. You may want to, if you haven't already, talk to a real estate attorney, if it's worth it, you think, from your end, from the tax burden, and see what your options are.
The other question, too, would be, what years did this apply for? What year did you kind of give the house back and get the debt forgiven?
That was last year, actually.
Okay. There was a Mortgage Forgiveness Act that was good through 2014, so I'd stick with Tyler there, perhaps talk to an attorney there, a professional, to see what may be done, a tax attorney. And then they may find that there were extenuating circumstances through these years.
Okay, but what about the PMI insurance? Wasn't that supposed to be for that if for some reason that you gave back the house or you defaulted on the house, that insurance supposed to have paid for any downfalls that may have occurred on the mortgage? That's what, because I've been paying for I think it's like 12, 13 years. So at the end of the day, I paid more in the PMI insurance than what the default was.
Yeah, again, that's out of our wheelhouse with everyday type scenarios, because it's very case specific. So I really recommend that you talk to a real estate attorney to get the answer on that, or maybe a mortgage broker, somebody who would know the specific of how PMI works. But thank you for the call, Chuck. We appreciate it.
Okay, thanks.
Yeah, great question. You know, that's given the length of time there,
right,
that may have some other issues that you don't follow the standard guidelines, so to say.
Exactly, exactly. And PMI insurance, again, private mortgage insurance, that's all tied to the amount that you're able to put down on your actual home purchase. So if you're within the 20% threshold, typically for a primary residence, that's not applicable. But it depends on the different circumstances, situations, everything else that goes into play. So definitely something to consider.
That's right. And you see how decisions like buying a house, things like that, affects your tax bill, right? That was a good example. All these parts of planning are connected, right? If you ignore one of them, you know, for example, the amount to put down on a house, you may be creating other scenarios with taxes. So let's keep going here, guys. We got another caller. Gary, welcome to the show.
Yes, John?
This is Tyler sitting in for John.
Oh, Tyler, that's right. Okay. Hey, you know, you guys, you know, you talk about all these other funds and this and that, but you know, there's a lot of, and my wife is a public employee or a teacher, and we have the a 457 deferred compensation plan.
Sure.
You know, I mean, I can only assume that everybody has the same choice pretty much throughout the state and PERS and all the other ones of, you know, the same funds.
Not necessarily.
No, okay, not necessarily. Okay, well, I realize that the STRS board determines this, that, and the other, but, you know, I would guess I'd like to hear you guys talk about some of the different funds that are available to us, which I, you know, don't count me on this, but I believe there's like, I don't know, 15, you know, of course they got all those lifetime or whatever, if you're going to retire in 2025 or 2020, 30 or whatever kind of thing.
Yeah, the life cycle or target date funds.
which I know you guys aren't big fans of, and I understand that. But the but on the other hand, obviously it's a blended fund and doesn't have a lot of expenses to it either. But
sure, so very rarely, Gary, on the show, very rarely do we get into talking about mutual funds because we try to focus more on the planning side of it. But of course, investing is part of financial planning.
So,
but
let me take it a step back further here. So, Gary, to your point here with STRS itself, the pension fund, the benefit that's going to be generated there, we have found that with recent announcements, with the funds. Liquidity at this point, it's not going to be enough for those that retire because there is not going to be cost of living adjustments, and there are concerns right now with the health care benefits that will be available.
Yeah, part of that depends on where you are, though, in your stage.
Exactly.
If you're close to retirement, those other pension plans are going to be very, very helpful, but they're going to change over time.
Right.
So, but as far as what's available to you exactly in your plan, they're not all created equal. So deferred comp's different than STRS, which is different than OPRS, the Ohio Public Employees Retirement System. So they're all very, very different. But the key is focusing on what your goals are. And I would encourage anybody, when they get those quarterly lists of their mutual funds, don't go just pick the one that has the highest rate of return, right? That's the exact opposite thing to do. You don't want to be focused on rate of return. It's more about the allocation and what your risk tolerance is. So very, very case specific on which funds to pick, but that's something that a good financial planner can help oversee.
All righty. Well, we thank you.
Thank you for your call.
Bye.
Appreciate it. All right, guys, we got a couple minutes left before the next break. Let's circle back to the tax reform ideas. And again, it's a framework.
Oh,
right?
Yeah,
it's not
absolutely.
Specifics. It's a framework. But let's shift more towards the deduction side. And very relevant to our phone call, actually, which was affecting things like home mortgage interest and whether or not you can deduct that on a tax return. And this framework, and this is what a lot of people are hemming and hawing about, as far as something they don't like with this idea, is they're going to eliminate a lot of the itemized deductions. So, for example, things like your medical bills, your medical expenses, right? Anything you pay for out of pocket.
State and local tax returns or tax, state and local taxes that are due. Those are going to be some of the other things that are going to be cut out of this as well.
Right. On the medical side, again, there's that 10% hurdle, so you can't deduct all of them. But they're talking about getting rid of that.
Mm-hmm.
Getting rid of, as you said, Craig, is the state and local taxes. They are talking about preserving, okay, so keeping the home mortgage interest deduction and charitable contributions.
Yep.
But things like property tax, right? Not just your state and local tax, but your property tax that you pay for your home, if you own your home. Talking about getting rid of that. So what's the trade-off? As we talked about, they're going to double the standard deduction. And I think the goal here is to shift more people towards that easier filing system rather than the itemized. And we didn't go through all of them, but there's quite a few that we'll take any questions on. Again, call us at 821-9886 or 800-610-WTVN. And when we get back from the break, guys, we'll talk a little bit about how this plan could affect small businesses.
Yep.
As we know, the U.S. the economy thrives on the production of small businesses. That's really where a lot of the wage growth needs to happen. So we'll talk about this plan and see how that can potentially help that. So please give us a call when you come back. You're listening to Managing to Be Wealthy. Welcome back to Managing to Be Wealthy. This is Tyler Cook sitting in for John Cecita this evening. I see we have another call over the break. We'll get to that in just a moment, but just want to remind everybody of our upcoming workshop. I think this is the third of the year, right?
Yeah.
The third workshop of this year?
Yeah, we're going to have the third workshop of the year here. So again, to learn more information about that or to sign up for it, it's going to be held from November 2nd to November 16th, each Monday there from 6:30 to 8:30 p.m., and actually, I'm sorry, that's going to be Thursdays, not Monday, this go around. So to sign up or to enroll in that kind of class is going to be visit our website at managingtobewealthy.com/classroom to find more information or more details on that at the Hub on Kenny Road.
Right there in Upper Arlington, yeah. And sorry, there's no steak dinner. This is real deal stuff, right? This is not come in and get your free pad of paper and all that other thing. No, it's learn about building a financial plan because, as we say, everybody needs a financial plan. Whether or not you should pay a financial planner is a whole other matter.
Exactly.
But we believe in, and part of our purpose of this show and really our company in general is to educate and teach people about what fee-only financial planning really is. So, again, go to managingtobewealthy.com/classroom to learn more. So, Carl, thanks for waiting for the break. I know you have a question. Welcome to the show.
Hi, how are you guys?
Great, how are you?
Good. I just wanted to create some clarity on one of your callers. PMI is private mortgage insurance, and the lender, it's coverage for the lender should the borrower default because he had probably, in this case, less than a certain amount of percentage down payment on his property. So the loan, because it's probably less than an 80% or less than 20% down, they have private mortgage insurance, which is basically the coverage should he default, that the lender gets coverage.
Right.
And it's the coverage they only get is just for that 20%, not for the whole loan. And he's not going to get the chance to get any break on that at all because the lender, in fact, took a huge loss on the loan, which is actually where he's getting a benefit, and he's going to have to talk to his tax accountant for the excess. So it's actually income.
Great. Thanks for the clarification. Appreciate it. And sounds like we're on the same page with how we thought that might work. So, again, we have really informed listeners. We talk about that all the time. We appreciate the calls and the feedback. Again, any questions, call us 821-9886 or 800-610-WTVN.
And, guys, I think this is all stemming from tax conversations.
It is, right? People love taxes. We try to make it not put you to sleep. But this stuff is important. It does affect you. And it's stuff that most people won't look at on a day-to-day basis. But so we try to simplify that and explain it in a way that we can all understand. So let's shift gears. We were talking about some personal tax reform. And part of this tax framework is also about the incentive to create jobs, as we said. And one way to do that is by lowering taxes on business, and particularly small business. So this proposal, Tony, what are we looking at there on small business impacts?
A couple different things, and it really depends on what type of small business, because there are different types, and depending on your income level, you may see things flatten, and that may be 20%, 25%. We'll see what it comes out with finally. Again, like you said, this is a framework,
right.
But the idea is, you simplify for small business, they're able to keep and generate and grow with their revenue that they're managing, that they've created, and they know better to do with it than government.
You got it. So there's two different parts. So there's the sole props, sole proprietorships, the small kind of mom and pop shop, or maybe a contractor type scenario. There's partnerships and S-Corps, and they're talking about taking that rate and taxing it at a flat 25%.
Yep.
And then you've got the bigger companies, the C-Corps, as they're known in the tax world. And it's talking about reducing that current rate, which is 35%, down to 20%. And I think if you see that, that's an incentive for a lot of big businesses. Take Apple, for example, or these mega companies. That's going to be some incentive to help keep revenue here,
right?
And because we have the highest corporate tax rate in the developed world. And right now, again, if they do this, this new rate would be about 22% below the average.
And it's amazing because, I mean, we hear about it on all the shows that we're watching in the background, everything else while we're doing our day-to-day financial planning items, but everyone's joking about those high-tax states. Well, all of a sudden, you're going to see much more of a development towards corporations because of the tax incentives to do that. Instead of paying the New York or the California, Tony, state taxes, anything like that, you're talking about creating a flat tax that people will be will be taxing their income at, as opposed to those higher state and federal tax rates that they're accustomed to. So it'd be a home run all around.
You've got it. And you guys know I've been trying to weave this in all day with you, so I'm going to make it about taxes. But
I can't wait.
For our audience out there.
What's coming?
Pickles.
Oh, pickles.
Let's
tell me
pickles
the deal. Tell me the deal here,
oh, that
Tony.
Was, that was clever.
Oh,
that was good.
So the idea, though, is our tax code, our tax structure has not been modernized in 30, 40 years, really. I mean, modernized in the sense of the way businesses operate now globally and with technology and on demand. So the idea of this pickles, and there's a monthly subscription service where you go ahead, you sign up, you subscribe, and every month to your door, you're getting a box of four different gourmet pickles. They've got like sweet and whiskey sour pickles and wasabi pickles.
I feel like I need to have my pinky out during this conversation.
You've got it. You've got it, Craig. But the idea is that's how specialized business has gotten and the customer and consumer has gotten, that we can literally sit at home and order all the different kind of pickles from across the world and have them sent to our doorstep. And our tax code, on the other hand, has not been modernized, has not been updated to deal with a world that You can literally have pickles sent to your door of a different flavor for every different month of the year. I mean, that's kind of incredible when you think about it.
It is. No, it's a great concept to think of it that way and compare that to what, and not necessarily taxes, but government in general, right?
Right.
Tends to lack in certain areas, and that's one of the things that certainly needs attention is our tax code. So that's a great comparison, a great analogy to use.
Well, and the idea, too, and then to go back to this framework here and with the corporations we're talking about, it's also moving the way our tax system works to one that favors, hey, let's be in the U.S., let's make money overseas, and bring it back home.
Mm-hmm.
That's another great idea that's in this framework. And that idea with ordering things on demand and having them next day, it really brings the U.S. back to competitiveness because you're not waiting on some container ship from China that halfway through you realize it was a bum order or something. No, when you can do it on demand right here in the U.S., oh, it's a lot quicker. The customer can have things customized. It works a lot better. And that's the idea with this framework here is incentivize things like that. Creative thinking, let the businesses be businesses, worry about that. And in a small way, this is a job-killing bill. It's going to kill a lot of accountant jobs. And that may be okay. But that's about the only job downside I see from this.
You got it. Great points. Great points. With the time remaining, I want to bring up that scandal I mentioned earlier. Again, it's sad these days, but it seems like every week there's a different scandal that comes out. This time, again, another professional athlete, or yes, it's a former professional athlete, NBA player, is facing criminal charges in this. And what happened was you had a group of people here. So you have an ex-NBA star, Coach Chuck Person. You've got some people with Princeton Advisory Group. The CEO is, I'm going to pronounce this correctly, Munish Sood, it looks like that's how you say that. And it's essentially what they did is the conspiracy and fraud and bribery. And what they're saying is they basically put these people in a room and made some backdoor deals that the coaches could get these players in front of other financial advisors, get them in front of, in this case, Adidas is cited, and really making cash payments to make these connections. I always wondered how that worked. You know, it seems like when kids declare for the draft, you know, whether it's the NBA, NFL, you name it, it seems like they get an agent really quick.
Yeah.
Really quick. And you've always
and
maybe
financial
thought.
Financial advisor.
And, in this case. That's right. But this is, it encompasses about 10 different coaches, managers, financial advisors, as I said, representatives of Adidas, the sportswear company. It looks like, I think, at Louisville last week, Rick Pitino was fired, canned. You know, the head coach should know about these things. Whether or not he did remains to be seen. But, that's the scenario you've got to be looking at. But and this has all been recorded. They had bribes. The FBI was in on it. The part that gets us, obviously, is the greed within the financial side of it with these advisors trying to make money off these kids.
That's the big
thing.
And
promises, making promises that, sound too good to be true. And if it sounds too good to be true,
you should be scratching your head saying, this does sound too good to be true. I need to get another opinion on this.
Right. And these financial advisors illegally paid the coaches to steer those student athletes towards them to manage their money. That's just makes me sick. Absolutely makes me sick. So it goes back to what I said earlier about teaching people about financial education and how to sniff some of these things out.
Right.
You know, a lot of these kids come from rough backgrounds, and it doesn't matter where you come from, but just to know how to analyze and cut through the pitch, so to say, and get down to seeing what this actually means. So when we come back, guys, we'll continue with this, and I also want to spend some time talking about how to teach your kids about money, and that can start as early as 5 and 6 years old. So you're listening to Managing to Be Wealthy on News Radio 610 WTVN. Welcome back to Managing to Be Wealthy. This is Tyler Cook sitting in for John tonight, again joined by Craig Konstantinovich and Tony Payne. So, guys, we've got a few minutes left here. I want to shift gears entirely from what we've talked about earlier and talk about how to give your kids a financial education, really kind of teach them the foundation or the groundwork to understand money, not be confused by it, not be afraid by it, not be intimidated by it, but rather understand how it can help them and what they're trying to do as they get older. So, I have an 8-year-old daughter, Cameron. She's incredible. She's a second grader. And they start talking about money and those things about second grade.
Yep.
In fact, it can start as early as 6 years old. Here's a good example, a good teaching moment, right? We were, she turned 8 back in August, and we were at the local store using one of her gift cards that she got. And we went to the store, and I let her pick out, this clothing store. They've got little jewelry. They've got nail polish, you name it, right? Very girly store. She loves it.
Yep.
So she went, she picked her things out, and we add, we sit there and add up. So we were doing math, right? That's good, right? I'm pretty good about that. I could still do basic math in my head. It's not all computer based. So we added up, and I think her gift card was $25, and she, it came to like something like $40 or $50. And so I explained, I said, Cameron, you don't have enough money on your card to pay for all these. And she understood that. So we did, again, did some subtraction, figured out what she could narrow the products down to, right? And we got to $25. And I said, Cameron, that's great, but guess what? That's still not going to be enough money. And she's like, "That? What are you talking about that? I've got, you said it's $25 and I have $25. Mm-hmm. Said, yes, but you have something to pay called taxes. And she looked at me, her face was, you ever see like the dogs when they turn their head sideways, like confused look, right?
Oh yeah.
That's kind of the look I got. She's like, huh? What are you talking about? And I use it as a teaching moment to say, well, when you buy, these are something called sales tax, and a portion of your money goes to pay for other things in the community, for the government, things like roads and other projects and, you know, God knows what, right? All these other things. And it was a moment that she understood the value of what she actually had. And more importantly, it was, you know, the gift card was great because it had a limit.
Right.
Right? We capped out at 25. I think what a lot of parents do, and this is probably more when they get into middle school and high school, but they're just handing them the card and saying, hey, go have fun. And in my mind, that could be a slippery slope because you could be teaching these kids that there really is no limit. Or if they go over the limit by a little bit, it's okay. When in reality, that can create some issues down the road. So starting early, and it's really about your model behavior, right? You as the parent are responsible. It's not just the teachers.
And it's like you said, there's all those teaching moments, those opportunities. And that's where, again, my name being Craig, I always geared towards Craig Electronics, which there were a few here and there, everywhere in between. There was a Craig TV that was out there, and it cost $89.99 at Circuit City when they were still in business.
Say, how long ago are we talking here?
So through allowance, through mowing lawns, everything else, I tried to save up. Took me a little while, but I wanted a TV in my room. And my parents said, that's great. You obviously know what you have to do to get there. We're not going to help you with it, but let us know and we can go sign up for the warranty or whatever else may come up at that point. I said, great. So it took me, you know, couple months to actually get to the point, and I had, you know, $95 saved up, and I was ready. I went to the store, and my parents didn't say anything. They didn't say don't worry about the taxes like you had told your daughter, but I get to the register and they said that's going to be $98.85, and I was like, I only have 95. What am I going to do here,
Mom? Right.
So that's when I started to learn about, okay, you always have to budget over, and that's where, again, everyone has their rule of thumb, but you know, at this point, I've always learned at least give 10% that you need to get ready to, whether it's rounding up to donate or rounding up for taxes, whatever the case may be, anticipate about a 10% extra buffer so that way you can actually get the product and make sure that all the taxes, everything else is taken care of.
You got it. You absolutely got it. It's about having the conversation, right?
Right.
And you can't have the conversation at a high level. Tony, I hear you.
Yeah, you got it, sir. You just hit on it. What I was hearing from both of you is communication.
You got it.
It's actually talking and having that discussion of what is going on here.
But I'll just text you those details.
Yeah, I was going to say, put the iPad down, put the everything else down, and just have that conversation. And you use those teachable moments to make it fun for the kids, right? You can't just sit there and say, okay, tonight we're talking about financial planning. Sit down. That's not going to work. You have to use games. I loved Monopoly as a kid. That was a fantastic learning tool as far as money and even real estate a little bit there too. So there's a lot of ways where you can use those teachable moments at it every day. A grocery store, great spot to do. I've been doing this recently with Cameron, and we'll see two different products. It's, you know, two different potato chips, and one's $3, one's $4, and we talk about, you know, what's the difference, and what would we do if we spent a certain amount of money, and walk through that kind of logic of why you look for things and what a sale really means, right? Is it really a sale? Because, again, as these kids enter middle school and high school, they're going to be bombarded. And then we know college, every college campus, first week of campus, you've got all these credit card offers, right? And kids, if they don't know the details, they're going to get suckered.
Yeah, that. And then, Tony, I can think of two or three instances here recently whether it's recent college graduates, recent people who have been married, or even older couples that are looking at another real estate or home or investment property, they don't understand, or they don't take the time to take a step back and think, well, what am I really signing up for when I agree to this mortgage or put my 20% down?
Right. Not just that monthly payment. It's all the other burdens.
Yeah.
You got it.
You've got it. That's a whole show in itself there, too.
It is.
The idea of knowing, being able to go into a decision, a financial decision, with all these other considerations aside from the objective. I mean, like you said, you saved up, had your goal, here's what I want to get. There may have been some other factors. Hey, maybe I need some accessories or
sure.
you know, stuff like that, too. That was part of that extra budget. So by doing our research planning ahead, we can have a better experience getting to that objective.
All right, and as parents, too, especially I think this probably applies more to high schoolers, but mm-hmm. it may be okay to let your kid fail at first.
Yes.
When and use that, again, as a teachable moment to explain what happened. Now, obviously, I'm not saying something significant, a huge financial impact, but maybe let a bad decision go, and as you can see it coming, right, as a parent,
yes.
right? We think we know best, but let them learn from that experience, and you know, that's a good teachable moment to just use real-life examples, not just us talking on the radio or anybody else, but that one-on-one direct contact with the family is really, really important. So I hope tonight's been a great show. We covered a lot of topics, as always, and we know that some of the topics we cover may be too personal, or your question may be too personal to ask on air. So always visit our website, managingtobewealthy.com, and there's a button in the top right that says Take Action, and then you can ask a planner a question. One of our certified financial planners will get back to you right away. There's also a section on there where you can reach out and complete a questionnaire to see how we can help you. And again, guys, we'll be back next week. It's been a great show. Craig, Tony, thank you for being here. We'll talk to you next week.